their greatest hour of need and fear of looting, of crime, of loss of business, loss of revenue, were specifically targeted because of their Second Amendment rights.
Nearly all of the work that the Public Service Commission does requires detailed financial analysis.
I think our media should be held to a standard that when we get it wrong, we should, most of them should say we got it wrong.
From the fourth floor of the Capitol Rotunda, you're listening to WFSU Public Media's Capitol Report, the podcast. I'm Tom Flanagan.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com.
This is Capitol Report, the podcast. I'm Tom Flanagan. Among today's Capitol action, a bill moving forward this session would repeal a state law that prohibits the sale of firearms and ammunition during locally declared states of emergency. As Margie Menzel reports, a number of groups that support the Second Amendment are backing the measure.
Spring Hill Republican Senator Blaise Ingolia says he thinks a state law blocking the sale of firearms and ammunition during locally declared states of emergency is unconstitutional. Or at the least, he says, it causes confusion. For example, he says last year, as Hurricane Helene hit Florida, the city of Okeechobee declared a state of emergency through a local ordinance.
They enacted an ordinance in the morning, I believe, stating that, hey, just letting everybody know during this state of emergency, ammunition, gun sales, marketing is not allowed. And then a lot of Second Amendment supporters started reaching out and say, hey, you cannot do this. And then it was repealed, I think, later on that day. The ordinance was repealed.
Luis Valdez represents Gun Owners of America. He supports the bill. He says during the peak of the COVID-19 pandemic, the cities of West Palm Beach, Riviera Beach, and Palm Beach had all declared local states of emergency, which automatically banned the sale and marketing of firearms and ammunition.
Which was clearly a violation of the Second Amendment. It was clearly a violation of our civil liberties, especially when Americans, at their greatest hour of need and fear of looting, of crime, of loss of business, loss of revenue, were specifically targeted because of their Second Amendment rights.
Fort Myers Republican Senator Jonathan Martin, who chairs the Senate Criminal Justice Committee, which recently heard the bill, says with hurricane season coming on June 1st, he encourages Floridians to be prepared to defend themselves. He says he and his young family have had to go to other parts of the state during emergencies.
I'm always bringing my firearms with me because my first responsibility as a father and a husband is to protect my family. I think this is part of something that we should talk about on the state level as far as actually encouraging people to be trained and ready and prepared to transport and travel with firearms during states of emergency and, of course, making sure that we're not under the thumb of overbearing local government declaring an emergency to take away our rights.
The National Rifle Association, Florida Gun Rights, and Florida Carry also backed the bill. No one in the committee spoke against it. It passed unanimously. I'm Margie Menzel.
The body that serves as a check on utilities, including price increases, may soon be expanded. Tristan Wood reports a proposal to increase the number of public service commissioners from 5 to 7 is advancing in the legislature.
The PSC holds public hearings whenever a utility wants to increase rates in Florida to, in theory, ensure that they follow the law and the increases are not excessive. It exists because in many areas, only one utility provider is available, creating natural monopolies that could hike up rates without government checks. But in several recent Supreme Court cases, like one against Florida Power and Light in 2023, the state Supreme Court found the PSC didn't adequately justify the rate increases. Pensacola Republican Senator Don Gates has sponsored a bill expanding the number of PSC commissioners to include a certified public accountant and a financial analyst.
Nearly all of the work that the Public Service Commission does requires detailed financial analysis, very detailed and very sophisticated. It doesn't always happen that the gubernatorial appointments have that background. And so I want to make sure that that background is reposed in the commission itself, just as it's reposed in the executives who hire experts from out of state to come in and plead their case.
Bill Herman, a retired St. Petersburg resident with experience in the utility industry, says adding those roles would help the commission cut through accounting games utilities play to justify rate increases.
Adding a certified public accountant and an individual with expertise in finance to the Public Service Commission will give them the tools they need to cut through the, shall we say, the fog of an income statement or the spreadsheets or the supporting documentations of a rate increase.
The bill also implements a host of new requirements for public utilities, which includes investor-owned ones like Florida Power and Light and municipal-owned ones like the ones in Jacksonville and Tallahassee. Gates says his bill will not stop rates from ever going up in Florida, but will increase accountability to better serve ratepayers.
When a public utility, which is a government monopoly, asks for the ratepayers of Florida to pay more, they should justify why and be able to explain it and be able to ensure that if there's a return on investment, that the return on investment is clearly articulated.
FPL, the largest utility in the state, is currently pursuing rate increases that will up their revenue by $1.5 billion in 2026 and $900 million in 2027. That's about $10 per month per customer each year. I'm Tristan Wood.
Finally tonight, a new defamation bill in Florida is causing some friction among state lawmakers and attorneys. Adrian Andrews reports it would eliminate some libel protections for media outlets.
Tallahassee Republican Senator Corey Simon believes his new legislation will hold journalists responsible if they report inaccurate information. His bill would remove the so-called fair report privilege that Simon says some are abusing. This privilege protects reporters from being sued for libel as long as they report on things fairly and accurately.
I think our media should be held to a standard that when we get it wrong, most of them should say we got it wrong.
Under the measure, media outlets could face lawsuits if they refuse to take down online stories that contain incorrect information about a person. Tallahassee attorney Barry Richard asked Simon to file the legislation because of a situation that happened 7 years ago. He says a media company failed to pull a story they had done about a Miami man who was falsely accused of a crime. Richard, who was the man's lawyer at the time, said that he asked the stations to remove the story from their websites to protect the man's image. All but one outlet honored the request.
Why should they be able to keep it up forever, knowing that it's false? It just makes no sense, and it can destroy people's lives.
If the measure becomes law, news outlets would be required to pull these kinds of stories from the internet within days of knowing any information is false, outdated, or uses a person's name or likeness without their permission. This would also apply to social media bloggers. Opponents say the measure is unconstitutional. Democratic Palm Beach Senator Tina Polsky opposes the idea, saying Simon's bill misuses defamation, and she points out journalists are reporting the information that's known at the time.
If you're only removing the original article, it still lives on. So how does that help the individual? The story ended up a different way than how they originally presented it. And now they're being told they must take it down. It doesn't take away the fact that it happened. And that's what news is.
Simon's measure did pass its first committee. The bill, as it's currently written, would not bring any punishment onto a reporter, but it does leave the door open for a person to sue the reporter and their news agency for making false statements. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Shows are available Monday through Thursday by 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, wherever you get your podcasts. On many of these Florida public radio stations, you can tune in each Friday to catch the latest on all things going on at the Capitol. That show is also available in podcast form. Technical assistance comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report, the podcast from WFSU Public Media.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.